Welcome back to the Firestarter Podcast, powered by our friendly neighbors at Nextdoor, the neighborhood app. I'm Ryan Dietrich, joined as always by Brandon Parker, and it's officially the offseason. Congratulations to the Tampa Bay Lightning for winning the Stanley Cup back-to-back for the first time since Crosby and the Penguins did it in 2016-17. And with that, we turn our attention to a full slate of off-season events, including the NHL draft later this month. And who better to break it all down for us than the Flames' Director of Amateur Scouting, Todd Button. Todd, thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Todd, first off, we're about 2 weeks away from the big day. Where are things at with you and the team? Is the list finalized at this point?
Not quite. We're still, it never really gets finalized until you're, probably the day before.
Sure.
But it's such a fractured season as far as viewings and how we've gone about it that it makes more sense that, we still got a little work to do, and we're just tidying up loose ends and making sure. And there's some, their management group, Brad and Dom Maloney and Connie, they go through a lot of video now after our meeting. So they'll be going through probably more close to where our pick is around that group of players than anything else. But that's a final part for them. But I know they're diligently working at the video of the prospects. I've talked to Tree and Connie recently and Don as well. So I know that they're calling, I just watch this guy or just watch that guy. And so it's been good, but the process will never, it never ends until you're ready to step on that floor.
Well, and just on that note, because I know that this will play a little bit of the theme of what we're talking about, but you said fractured year, and this has to be one of the more challenging years to compile that list just because of the viewings. And, I would assume obviously more opportunities for some players than others, and then maybe no viewings for, in-person viewings for certain players. I mean, what has the challenge been like going through this?
Well, in a typical year, we can... with our three crossover scouts, myself, Fred Parker, and Rob Sumner, we'll get enough viewings on 45, 50 guys, the top 45, 50 guys in our list. And then you add into that all the area scouts and their reports. So you have a lot of data points for your top 45, 50. Well, with travel restrictions, we don't have as much crossover scouting. We have video, but it's still, Fred Parker couldn't leave Canada. And so he was restricted to video. So the live viewings, the video viewings, like you said, Ontario hardly played or didn't play. Some players did, but most of them didn't. Travel in Europe was limited after, say, Christmas, and then it picked up again. But so all those points, right? You're trying to put a puzzle together where you might have had, 50 crossover viewings, including area scouts. And this year, out of those 50, 55 guys, you might only have 20 that all three have seen live or whatever the case may be. But we've seen everybody, just it's different than when you haven't seen guys, everybody live or everybody on video. It's fractured in that way.
Yeah. Well, and on that note, this is also the second straight year without the NHL scouting combine. The fitness portion is obviously something you can't recreate, but have you still been able to meet with the players over Zoom and fill your notebooks that way?
Yeah, you can't meet with the players. That's one of the issues as well, right? There's no in-person meetings. Yeah. We've interviewed everybody again. Like our standard rules, we interview everybody on our list. Some guys are harder to get to than others. We've done it all on Zoom. Every player that's not on our main list is done by the area scouts. Our mental performance coach, Matt Brown, he leads all our interviews. So the interview process and the getting to know kids has been, on Zoom. It's not the same, but a big kid, if an Owen Power walks into a room, there's a presence there. You can see it. He's a big giant kid, right? So you miss that part. And for sure, you miss the combine, the medical part and the physical part. Because you want to see where kids have to get to physically and how far they have to. And that's not a knock. Some of them, it's positive. You say, oh, geez, he gets knocked around a bit. He's not strong enough. But then you see he's, 170 pounds with room to put 20 pounds of muscle on. You're like, okay, that's a positive for the kid rather than a negative. So, in that regard, I think that's the most missed part for us is consistent live viewings and for sure the combine, the physical and the medicals. And we've talked about this last year with the medicals. You don't want to miss a kid. Kids have been flagged before with heart conditions or what have you that either didn't get drafted or they didn't know about it so they could get it fixed or whatever. So that part from a personal standpoint, an individual standpoint, I think that's important. So they're doing it obviously on their own with their own doctors, but it's still better to have a group the group, the whole group thing. So
sure.
When you you got an opportunity to go to the U18s or under 18s, right? I was just going to ask you about the quality and kind of, well, maybe just first of all, give us a little bit of a background on what you were able to see live in person this year, and then just how valuable that was to go to those U18s and see, you know, a number of those top end prospects kind of all in that setting like that.
So personally, for me, I'm a dual citizen, so I was allowed to go to the United States, and I traveled once the. You know, I saw the Quebec League actually before last season's draft and then after, and then the three Western bubbles in Canada. I didn't go to the US one. We have Rob Sumner right there in Seattle, so who covered that? And so a lot of USHL, a lot of, I saw the college kids, and then like the only thing we missed was Ontario. There were some practices, scrimmages that we saw in Ontario because they were going on. They thought the season would go, so you go to the rink and watch some players play, but it's still not the same. So happy with where our list is as far as the live viewings, not only myself, but Rob Sumner and Jim Cummins, a lot in the U.S., and our European scouts, Bobby Haglund and Ari Hampa. They saw a lot of the live guys either before and then after the certain shutdowns, right? And especially in Sweden. And that was big because I think it's a pretty deep Swedish draft as far as the top end guys go. As far as Texas goes, it was weird watching it because you're trying to focus in a normal year. You have different data points during the year, right? You watch them in the summer tournaments, and you watch them in the fall, and you watch them progress during the year. And this is, we always say we don't want to take any, you know, 10-day segment of a season or any one tournament and say that's the full evaluation. But, you know, it was harder this year because that might have been all you had for some kids, especially the OHL kids who didn't play in Europe. So overall, the tournament was really good. It was high end and it was intense. Like the players were the players knew that this was their chance. So I think that helped them. But you still have to take your video viewings. And, you know, when you're talking with the top kids, you see most of them as underages, especially late birthdays. So the late birthdays plus the kids we saw at the 18s, I think we have a really, really, really good handle on those guys. And then, again, you watch the Western Hockey League, I think you played 24 games, and you got to make your decision based on 24 instead of maybe, you know, 70, 75 games, including playoffs. So it is what it is. It's the same for everybody. But it was great to get down to Texas and watch live hockey. And I was down there for about 3 weeks because I stayed and watched, I went early to watch some USHL playoffs or regular season. And then after I stayed to watch some playoffs. So I saw quite a bit of that, the Americans that I might not have seen before, like in seasons past.
Right.
I'm sure the hockey fan in you probably takes over at some point too, right? You're not in a rink for so long and all of a sudden you have a chance again. You're going to want to soak it in when you have the opportunity, I imagine.
Well, we always joke about going to certain spots. And I'll tell you, when we had a chance to go, there was nobody complaining. It was, let's go, yeah. Right? Like, you know, we're go there. It doesn't matter how cold it is. I can't wait to get there and watch hockey. And that's how it was for us. You're still a fan when you do this job. You can't help but be a fan. So it was good. And live hockey, I'm telling you, it's just, there's nothing like it. Like I said, you see the presence of a player, you see the actual speed of a player because it's not on a screen. It's impressive when you can see those guys in a different light for sure.
I know you guys watch a lot of video anyway, but when you have, you know, a year where you're focused so much more on video, do you, maybe appreciate more of the subtle, the nuances of watching in person or what you miss when you don't have that opportunity? I mean, does that stand out a little bit more now having gone through this?
For sure. So in the past, you always saw the player first, you saw him live, you saw what he was doing on the ice, and then you supplemented that with video after the fact.
Yeah.
And I've always said that really helps because you're watching a game with six or seven players, you might miss something. So you can go back and watch it and evaluate a shift by shift or see a stretch you might have missed something, right? So goals for, goals against by goalies or the play, whatever happened. In this case, we were doing evaluations. We're trying to identify and evaluate players based off of video first. And that was really tough because like you said, when you get to something live and you watch a forward, how quick he is, and you don't see that all the time. You can't see the competition, how high the level of competition is. If you're watching a different league in Europe or high school, you don't know how good the players are in comparison to the guy you're watching. So when you see that live, it's a big difference. When you see a speed, when you see the flat out speed of somebody, like I said, when you watch Owen Power, when he walks into a meeting room, and you see how big he is, or you see his range on the ice, you're like, okay, that's pretty impressive, right? You don't necessarily see that on video all the time. And there's always little things behind the play that you can't pick up on video. Is he in position? Is he working to position? Because it doesn't have the whole focus, right? So there's lots of parts. I love watching video after I've got a pretty good idea what the player is, because you can pick up a little bit, but there's so much in the game that you miss when you're not there live, for sure.
When you need to borrow a ladder, or your pet runs away, or you want to get the top recommendations for local takeout food, the best people to turn to are your neighbors. Download Nextdoor, the free app with verified users in every Calgary community, keeping neighbors connected for great advice, recommendations, help, and more. Get the most out of your neighborhood with Nextdoor, connecting neighbors in communities all over Calgary. Download the app today or visit nextdoor.ca.
I'm curious. I look at a guy like Cole Sillinger. He normally plays in the WHL, but because of the delayed start to the season, he goes down to the USHL and tears it up. So when you're evaluating a player like this, and he isn't the only one that went that route, do you also have to put some emphasis on the previous year where he was playing with and against players you're more accustomed to seeing at that age?
Right, absolutely. And we did a lot of work on the players from last year. We started our season watching, you know, I'm going to say the last 10 games or 5 games of the players, all the players from last year that we on our initial primary list. So, and then you try and, again, watch the progression, watch how they develop, see it over the course of the year. You know, the WHL this year was, they had a lot of younger players in the league. There was 2005s playing, right, which you normally don't see. So is it watered down, the product? Is it a true indication of what a player could do based on being a lot younger? There's different bubbles. So some regions, obviously, bubbles were not as strong as the other ones. So you got to take that all into consideration. And that's, again, it's part of the puzzle we're putting together. When I talk about being fractured, that's another part of it too, right? Like that's just what we have to do. And that's what everybody has to do. But for sure, like I said, it's a puzzle, and it's not 10 piece big, you know, big pieces. There's a lot of small pieces in there, but exactly what you said, it's a part of the process. And that's why we went back to last year. And honestly, the top guys, you know, from the years before, right? There's maybe one or two a year that you didn't know about or didn't play in the league. I think of a guy like Braden Tracy who didn't play in the WHL, and then he was a first round draft pick. So there's very few of those every year, but in this case, it was a lot harder if there was. And I think that was part of that hurts guys like him or players in that situation who might not have had the whole season to show what they have.
To develop, to have that natural progression in their careers, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. Like you see a kid and you watch him in the first month of the season, and you're like, well, okay, it's his first year in the league. And you see it more a lot in the Quebec League with first year players. And you see a little bit in the Western Hockey League. I talk about a guy like Braden Tracy, and you watch him progress during the year. And you usually know these kids as under 17s because they're all there, like Hockey Canada and the United States program. Like, you know these kids, but you still want to see the progression on the ice. And it's not, you don't say that player X is he's a first rounder after, you know, 5 games, but maybe in March he's gone from, 50 or 60th on your list to 30th. And that's a significant jump. Usually the top players, like I said, we know about from the 17s and the under 18s, a lot of kids, like we knew Zari because he played in the under 18s as an underage. So the late birthdays, I think, have an advantage this year because you saw him a lot with the regular birth group. Right. So again, it's a lot of pieces of the puzzle that we don't always have to put together that we have to this year. But I think it's going to help us down the road as well.
For sure. Well, and I was going to ask you, because a lot of the draft analysis that you see or you read about, you know, they kind of talk about ledges or, you know, different ledges. And there always is, they vary in the first round and then beyond. But, you know, sort of what's your perspective on the top end of this draft and what potential ledges there are there?
The ledges. I think it's a really, really good draft. Obviously, I think there's a lot of good players. There's going to be players that are taken, you know, second round on that might surprise people because they don't know them or they haven't heard of them. Excuse me. And the analytics don't have them up there, or player, you know, people just haven't seen them, but a team might have seen him or known him. I think specifically about the Ontario Hockey League, who most of the kids didn't play, right? So As far as ledges go, I think, you know, we're picking, we have the 12th pick in the 13th slot, but I think, you know, we know we're 100% confident. There's eight guys that won't be there. So we're picking from four guys, not that it's going to be the top eight, but we know that when we count the pick, there'll be eight guys that we know are not going to be there. So we're picking from a group of four or five that we're circling around right now. And then you got to throw in two goalies who are highly thought of too. So we haven't really put ledges on it, maybe a top six, and then it's wide open. Yeah, so that's where it is right now. But, you know, the eighth guy could be just as good as the fourth guy down the road. It's just the way the year went that I'm not quite comfortable putting ledges on it right at the top right now, other than to say eight guys won't be there when we pick, and we know who those eight are.
Todd Button with us here on the Firestarter podcast, powered by Nextdoor. It's easy to plug into your neighborhood right now by simply downloading the Nextdoor app or by visiting nextdoor.ca/flames. I'm curious, Todd, I mean, you got a little bit of practice last year with the cancellation of some of the key events down the stretch of the amateur season. And that was everyone's first foray into what a virtual draft would look like and how things would unfold on draft day. Did that help you in any way prepare for this year where the challenges were now even more magnified?
Absolutely. It was specifically the video and how we incorporated it into our day-to-day plan and what our protocols were and how we watched it, what each scout's responsibility was as far as how many games they had to watch, which players they had to watch, that type of thing. As for the actual draft, not really. I mean, we'll hope it's a little bit faster this year than the second day last year. But other than that, missing key events again, and, you know, watching the World Juniors on TV and that type of thing or on video, it helped us last year because we were ready to do it this year in video. And, you know, the only part was there was no long-term plan this year. It was always, it could start in 2 weeks. So you're always getting amped up, and then and I'm sure for the players too, right? You're not playing. So we went through the same emotions, but the good thing is we had video to watch, and we just kept on watching it, even though there were lulls or moments where you're like, oh, this might never start or whatever the case may be. But for sure, last year's whole thing at the end of the year, the whole way it ended and the way we had to watch video and then incorporate that into our season ending meetings, we did that right from the start this year. So I think we're further ahead, obviously, than we were last year.
Well, and you know, you guys always, the work that you guys put in, you know, over the course of the year, you know, I would imagine there is some sort of a little bit more, you know, pride in terms of the later rounds when you get to those picks that, you know, guys maybe know a little bit more of throughout the course of your career. Is there more potential for that just given the way that this, you know, last season has gone? You know, I know that those are always kind of, you know, sources of pride when a player later in the rounds gets selected and then becomes an everyday NHLer, but maybe just take me through that kind of emotion and the opportunities that may lie ahead there in the later rounds.
Well, I've said this before, we're lucky. We have the resources to have heavy area scouting, and we may have a few more amateur scouts than other teams in certain areas. So basically our Quebec scout, Patrick Lachance, and our Ontario-based scout, Terry Dorn, like all they do is watch the Ontario League and the Quebec League. So our Western scouts cross over, but it's such a vast territory to cover. Like they're responsible for the West, right? So when it comes to the crossover scouting, Rob and Fred and I, we work off the top of the list. So the way Tree is set up and the way our resources are, we're allowed to have guys that are focused on that secondary part of the draft, the area list we call it. And they're just as important now as they've always been. We've got third round picks and later we've got some mileage from them. We've got, you know, just a guy like Andrew Mangiapane who is establishing himself as an everyday NHLer this year. And so we put emphasis on those guys. We want them to come up with players in the draft that they're passionate about, that they evaluate as being everyday NHL players. And we think because of the resources and the work they put in that we'll make some picks this year, but absolutely those later picks are going to be some surprises. So again, Ontario didn't play, so there's a bulk of people who didn't play. So you're basing a lot on the previous season and whatever information you can dig up, or scrimmages or whatever. When you thought it was going to go, you go watch practices. It's a bigger puzzle, but I'm confident in our group, especially our area scouting, that they have their area sorted out.
I know comparisons from one year to the next aren't, you know, totally useful, but you mentioned it there without the OHL playing. Some years you look at the top end of the draft board and you see a ton of Western League guys. 2 years ago, it was the U.S. National Development Team that really stole the spotlight. But this year, it seems like there's quite a mix. You got some, you know, junior guys, college guys, and even some European pros. And is there anything to read into that or any sort of trend that might be forming here?
I don't think so, but I do think the Ontario guys... there would have been a couple guys that that might be second round picks this year that could have slid into, you know, into the first round if they had played the whole year, and guys we had targeted or we had on our preseason list. Overall, it's always cyclical, right? We didn't get as many viewings of tier two leagues as you wanted to. So that's, you know, there wasn't like, you know, the kids that played at the Hockey Canada group, Coolmans and guys like that, they're well known. But the secondary guys that are going to college, you say, okay, I'll take this guy in the fifth round. He's going to college for 3 years, needs lots of physical development. You didn't have that as much this year. So again, rely heavily on your area scouts. But as far as cycles go, I think this is just a normal year as far as where the bulk of the top players are coming from.
I know you mentioned you got some travel in, but was it a little bit strange to be around home as, you know, more this year, or, you know, different for the family? What was the year like in that sense?
Yeah, it was, because you're
definitely
you have a routine, right? Yeah. My routine is like, you're like, basically our work's at night, you're going to games at night, and then 7 o'clock hits Friday night, you're like, what do I do now? Right, because you can watch video during the day, there's no live games to watch, but so you're like, it was neat. My dog's never gonna leave my side again. When I leave the house, he's because you know, you walk them 3 times a day. Yeah. I think Ontario, where I live, has been locked down a little bit more. Like, yeah, there was a good 2 months where we were completely locked down. So you weren't going anywhere. Again, I was allowed to go because of my dual citizenship. And even when I came home and did my 14-day quarantine, it was like, well, I can't go anywhere. So it's not like, you know, I'm stuck in the house and people are out. So for the normal routine, it just, at night comes, like I said, you have dinner, and then it's 7 o'clock and you're used to being in Guelph or London or somewhere. And all of a sudden you're like, what do I do now? And even before the NHL started, even worse, right? Once the NHL started, it was a little better. There's games to watch, but I probably should have done it like I usually do and just done my video work at night instead of during the day. But you know, you get so much done during the day, and then night comes in. So yeah, it was way different like that. All my girls are at school, off, they're living on their own now. So it wasn't that much of a factor with the kids. And yeah, I know one of our, Rob Sumner's, got two younger boys, 12 and 15. So he got to spend a lot of time with them, which was really beneficial for him. He loved it, right? His son plays hockey, got to coach him and stuff like that. So that was really good for the guys with younger families. So it may be more different next year if we ever get back to traveling again for those younger kids.
Yeah, no doubt.
So with all that extra time on your hands, did you pick up any new hobbies, or were you just working harder because you always had video that you could, you know, rewatch over and over again?
You know what? I watched more video. I didn't want rewatch it, I'll tell you that. And okay, there was times, honestly, there were times where you just like, I'm not watching video for 2 days because you just, your eyes are bugging out.
It's too much. Yeah.
Anytime you're watching it, right? So I didn't pick up new hobbies. There was nowhere to go. Read some books, a lot of books. Caught up on everything I needed to catch up as far as Netflix and all those TV shows. But no, it was certainly different. But hopefully, we're back on the right track soon and going into next season for sure.
Well said. Yeah, you said it. That's for sure. You know, Todd, we did kind of a similar interview last year prior to the draft like this, and you said something that really struck me. It's easy for the hockey fan in us to forget that these are kids. And, you know, at that age, there's a ton of brain and cognitive development that still needs to be processed. And, you know, when you're making such critical decisions for a sports franchise, how do you kind of weigh that and work with that information?
Well, I think I mentioned our mental performance coach, Matt Brown. He helps a lot too. And you gather as much information as you can. And it's not negative information. It's just, you know, you see kids from different areas that for whatever their life experiences are, they're way more mature than other, you know, you guys know a 17-year-old in one situation is way more mature than a 17-year-old in another situation. Sure. So you just dig the information. I think I had 3 kids. So I've been through that, how you know, the growth and the development of kids in that area, So I think you do work. You just work, you get information, you gather it, you put it together. You get Matt Brown involved because he's obviously the professional in it. And you try not to judge, you try and evaluate. That's the biggest thing we can do, and see where there's potential pitfalls, or see where there's, hey, this guy's underdeveloped. He's going to grow. He's got an unbelievable growth potential in his development that's really going to help him down the road.
That's kind of a nice segue too, because, you know, I think a lot of fans would look at the draft and start to weigh, you know, the importance of a pick based on immediate need to your franchise or something that could pay off down the line. And as a scout has been doing this for a long time now, do you have a philosophy on that, or does it really depend on the situation, depend on the player, state of your franchise, all those different factors come into play?
Yeah, I think that's the best way to put it. It's certainly dependent on the individual and definitely on the state of your franchise, right? Where you are as far as you gonna let young kids play, or you have a veteran team, you can let them develop a little bit more. But in most situations, when you have that veteran team, you're picking later in the draft. So obviously there's going to be more potential for late development for those kids. When you're picking early in the draft, there's always an urgency from your fan base or from your management group. We need a player that's not necessarily going to play right away, but it's going to play quicker. But they should play quicker because they're higher in the draft, right? So I think as it unfolds, you have that. But I don't think you can be afraid to take a guy that might take 2 or 3 years in college to develop. And when he gets to your lineup, you know, he's a solid player. And that's been our mandate, to be honest with you. I don't have a personal one. You pick the best player available at your spot. And if they need a little more time than the guy taken right after him, that's fine. You think after it all evens out, when they're 26, 27 years, you'll have the best player, then that was the right pick. I don't think Brad has his mandate to us is, you know, get the best player, evaluate them all equally, and don't worry about them playing on our team right away.
I was just going to ask you one more that's kind of circling back a little bit about Connor's area. And, you know, obviously we talk a lot about this upcoming draft, but I'm kind of curious to kind of now look back on his season after, you know, the draft process to get him. You know, you trade the pick down a couple of times, you get him, you know, the guy that you want, and then to see him kind of start his season in the American Hockey League, have some success there. And then obviously the year that he had in Kamloops as well. What did you make of the progress of him? And obviously you throw in the World Juniors there too.
Yeah, I think it was good for Connor. I think it's good for those kids to get around pros and see how pros act and behave on a day-to-day basis, because it's significantly different than junior, right? You're living on your own. You're responsible for your own bills. You got to feed yourself, all that stuff. So how they train, even at the AHL level, like a lot of those players, they're like, they're good, solid professionals away from the ice as far as the way they train and take care of their bodies and nutrition-wise. It's great to be in the NHL and watching the GOs and those guys and the Backlunds who also do the same thing, the Tanevs. So I think it's certainly beneficial unless they go back and revert to junior habits. So once you have that experience and you see, okay, this is what it takes, you take that back, whether it's how hard you practice, how fast you practice, your pace in practice. We always tell the kids, even when they're up in the NHL, you go back to the NHL, don't slow down in practice, play it. You have the experience, you know what it's going to take, work on that. So with Connor, I think he did in all regards that we're talking about. And you can't always do that. Kids, it's a benefit for all those kids across the NHL, all the prospects who got a chance to play in the AHL. And some kids got to play in it for the whole year, right? So especially the Ontario Hockey League kids who didn't play. So I think it's only beneficial for them going forward, as long as they apply what they learned back to wherever they go back and play in junior. And we didn't have any concerns with Connor doing that. So we knew what type of person he was and his insides. So he'll be fine going forward, but the experience is going to be really beneficial as to him adapting quicker next year.
For sure.
Last one for me, and I've got to put you on the spot here, Todd. Don't worry, I'm not going to ask you exactly who you're going to be taking with that 12th pick. But after Connor Zary last year, you went on a little run, 3 straight defensemen. The year prior, no defensemen. So I don't know if there's anything to read into that. But when you look ahead to this year, another 7 picks in the deck for you. Is there a pressing need for you? Anything that you're focusing on as you head into the draft?
I don't think there is. I think we like where our prospect base is as far as positionally. We're just going to take the best player. And I know at our position, we could have a forward, a defenseman. The goalie's going to be in the conversation. Again, we're at 12. I think this, after last year, what seeing what we did as far as moving down, I think that opportunity will be there this year as well. So we'll see how it all plays out. But positionally, we're gonna go with the best player.
Great stuff. Todd, thank you so much for joining us here today. We're only 2 weeks away from night one of the NHL draft, and I personally can't wait. I know we're going to talk again real soon.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Todd.